This spoiler-filled podcast is recorded live, unscripted, and intended for those over 18. Now prepare your ears for the audio stimulation they've been waiting for all day as we step into
the spoiler room.
And welcome to another edition of the spoiler room. And it's been a couple of weeks, but we are back. We got a fun one for our 105th episode. I think it's actually kind of appropriate for the film that we are covering today, involving a character whose name initially is number 5. And with us tonight to talk about Short Circuit from 1986, we've got a crew assembled here. First off, we have Mr. Cole Meredith in the room. Hello, Cole. How are you?
Good evening, Mark. I am doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Always glad to have you in a spoiler room. And next to him is the diva of the spoiler room and the one who suggested we do this, which I'm so glad she did. It's the one and only Dawn is with us tonight. Hello, Dawn.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Glad to have you here.
Sorry, I've had a cold, so...
Yes, she is having a cold, so send good thoughts to our Dawn, the lovely Dawn, and so that we can make sure she gets on a fast recovery for the horror festival, which will be in about a week and a half. But tonight, we talk about 1986's Short Circuit, story of number 5. He's a robot, one of many experimental robots that are meant for war, but due to an accident, he suddenly becomes conscious. Wow. That's a word. My pronunciation is going to be horrible. Anyway, he comes alive, basically, and number 5 escapes and starts exploring the world, and soon he crosses paths with a lovely Stephanie, played by Ally Sheedy, and we see how he befriends her and more, which we'll get to in a minute, and as the company who built him want to get him back under control in the lab. This one was interesting because when I posted it on Facebook that we were doing this episode, suddenly like a bunch of people out of the work would just started quoting this. This is a film what I find funny is the film that I don't think you see a lot of people talk about, but everybody who grew up in the 80s knows. Wouldn't you say, Don?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was fortunate enough to see this on the big screen, not last weekend, the weekend before in Oshkosh. And I just took a selfie and posted, going to find out who's Johnny. And within 10 seconds, the next line of the song was there, posted by somebody. I didn't post what movie I was seeing, just that one line. And there it was. You're right. It is a quotable movie.
It's a quotable movie, but again, too, it's not one you don't hear talked about that often in circles, but if someone makes a reference to it, we all know it. How about you, Cole? Wouldn't you say that this is a film that maybe is a little underrated or at least isn't talked about as much as it probably should?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I'm so glad to have a little hour or two here to talk about it because it's a fantastic movie. It's fantastic family entertainment. And to me, you know, not to get too deep, but it does what any good movie should do, which is function on some sort of entertaining superficial level where you can get enjoyment out of it, you know, without having to think too deep. But also, if you want to read something into it, you can. And starting with the first shot, which focuses on a bunch of gorgeous bright red roses, which tanks subsequently roll over, you get a notion of sort of what the movie is about, which is the struggle of beauty against, the bulldozer that may not understand it or realize it. And that's where the heart of the movie is to me. But all that aside, John Badham, you know, I think he's a great director, totally underrated. And I guess he's best known for Saturday Night Fever. But, you know, I'm a huge Stakeout fan. I like Radio Flyer and even stuff like The Hard Way. A lot of stuff he's done all has this really good pop sensibility, but also a really honest, optimistic outlook on everything. Short Circuit is just a great time at the movies. I every time I pop this in, I smile and laugh. And tonight I was crying. My girlfriend looked back at me. It's like, what the hell are you crying for? It's Short Circuit, God. And also, of course, the Ally Sheedy connection. I love Ally Sheedy, you know, Breakfast Club and High Art. And she's a great actress. I love the flick, man, for sure.
Yeah, it's a great flick, and it is from that mid-80s, and this isn't the first time this director has tackled the subject of war versus peace, basically, which we have very evident in this, and it was kind of a running theme in the mid-80s, especially because you were getting into the real bits of the Cold War and stuff, and so you'd get films like this. I mean, he also directed War Games, which, you know,
oh, that's right.
There's a movie right there that is Ally Sheedy was in, and it's along the same theme as Short Circuit. And he directed a film that Dawn and I were talking about before we started recording, called Blue Thunder, which is about a helicopter. It's a helicopter movie, guy, but it's a specialized helicopter used by the police force. And there's some kind of a little bit of that same theme of war versus peace and technology and such in that film. So this was a common theme for a little while for him, I think, during this time.
I wonder, though, if it's so much war versus peace or if it's almost bordering on a fear of technology and AI, especially because not just with what he did, what Badham did, but also other movies of the time, like Terminator, for example.
Oh, yeah. Well, the 80s.
Because that was all that same time.
The 80s sci-fi was really big. I mean, well, even late 70s to 80s, especially mid-80s, it was a great time for, I mean, that was a lot of people call the second golden age of cinema, kind of, but especially genre films. Oh my God, did we get the genre films? And a lot of the sci-fi films, yeah, where the robot suddenly become, you know, self-aware, and if that was a good or bad thing. And here in Short Circuit, it's a good thing. It's a good thing that he becomes AI, you know, aware, because he turns into a really great guy. Who just wants to live and wants more input, which was probably a pickup line at a number of computer conventions after this movie came out for about the next year. Unfortunately, it still didn't work, but, you know, the computer geeks tried to use it. Hey, baby, I'm looking for more input. How about you? But anyway, sorry.
That sounded a little too familiar.
I'm not going to say if I've ever used that line. But anyway, first, what stands out is we've got a lot of practical effects in here. And, you know, when you're dealing with a movie that your main character is a robot, I think even for today, the number 5 character is really friggin' impressive for what they do as far as animatronics and how they built him and everything. And they actually built 5 of them. So, Cole, what'd you think of the special effects involving Johnny Five and his manipulation and puppeteering and everything? What'd you think about that?
Absolutely phenomenal, man. I mean, really, I'd seen the movie, oh, Christ, I don't remember how long ago, but the last time we were in Pan America, I said, you know, go pick out a bunch of movies, guys. And they came back with a pile of kids' movies, and Short Circuit was on there. And I hadn't watched it up until about 3 or 4 hours ago. And the puppeteering is really impressive. And, you know, now that I'm actually editing my own films, I don't look for flaws, but I kind of am just aware of the process of combining effect shots with, you know, second unit footage and all this, all the things that go along with making a sequence that perhaps might involve a robot parachuting from the sky, you know? And it looks good in this film. Everything looks really good. And even more than that, like the notion of the robot having a soul, right, can't be too easy to do. I mean, they've obviously got to storyboard that and discuss it, but even no matter how well you plan in the mid 80s and 86, right, you have the script, you have it all planned, you show up to do it, how well can it turn out? I mean, I kept watching the Short Circuit puppet thinking of Brundlefly, actually. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of because of the construct of the face or whatever, but it works so good. The shot where he looks at the butterfly and then the eye flaps kind of flap like a butterfly's wings, and you connect with what he is connecting with in that moment. And I'm getting too deep about it, but really, it's as Chris Wallace said when he was designing The Fly 2, he obviously won the Oscar for The Fly 1, and because of that, directly, probably got the job to direct The Fly 2. And when he stepped into the job, realized, shit, how do you create a realistic puppet? It, you know, it's all got to be in the eyes. So I think, obviously the screenwriters are good. They're the same guys who wrote Tremors. And the effects guys are good, but I got to give John Badham the credit probably for working with his editor to give these special effect shots the oomph they needed to connect with not only Ally Sheedy's character, but everybody else, you know, every little thing like butterflies, crickets. Yeah. And that can't be easy to do, you know?
Well, and with a movie like this, we've talked about a few other films before where you've got an inanimate object or some such that is going to be your main character. You have to be able to sell it to the audience, and they do it so well, I think, in this, with such a well-puppeteered character that you really forget that it's a special effect, and I think you really fall into the that number five is an actual living character. What about you, Don? How do you think the majority of the effects in this film still really hold up today, don't they?
I love practical effects, and that is what this is. That's why the Muppets are still awesome. That's why people still love, you know, the creatures from Star Wars. Practical effects are everything because they last. One very memorable scene when Johnny Five is flipping that washer after he tears apart Stephanie's ex's car. Disassembles the car. And he's flipping that coin or that washer, mimicking the scene from the movie Scarface. Mm-hmm. The original Scarface, not the Al Pacino one. And that's just a practical effect. I guess I was reading an interview on the Johnny Five website, and they said they just manipulated it with monofilament and ran it up and then played it backwards to create that effect. That's all it was.
Wow.
Sure.
Super simple.
Wow.
And it stands up. It holds up 30 years later.
Yeah.
I love practical effects.
Yes!
I enjoy practical effects as well, and I think they really help undate a film. Though there are the music in here does help date it as well as some of the other things. If you just take Johnny by himself, though, well, excuse me, number five, he doesn't get the name Johnny till the very end. But number five, if you take him, you know, just by himself, it's an impressive puppeteering. And you're right, Cole, the editing with that, for me, the scene that surprised me with this film, actually, because I remembered most of it, but rewatching it for the show, is the scene where he's dancing with Ally Sheedy.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was, I mean, it's simple, but at the same time, I thought that was really impressive how they manipulated that, and you know, he's twirling her around and he dips her, which does kind of lead though to our young Johnny Five here. I'm sorry, but Don, what is it with the 80s and young women and odd pairings such as a duck from space, or in this case, a robot?
Hey, leave Howard out of this. He's the most awesome duck in the universe.
Okay, sorry. But we had...
Everybody wants Howard.
Everybody wants Howard. But it kind of had a similar vibe here with Short Circuit with Ally Sheedy's character. I mean, you know...
That borderline on something completely different.
So I wasn't the only one that kind of got that vibe. I mean, that dance scene specifically.
Well, you know, and maybe I don't think they were going for the women empowerment, taking their own orgasms into their own hands, but...
Yes, folks, that's right. We've just equated that with a Short Circuit. Thank you very much for the spoiler room. Awesome. No, but there is the scene, too, where he just opens the door while she's in the bathtub, and he's like, oh, hey. And I'm just like, oh, hey, this is awkward. And we are joined by another fellow spoiler room member, Mr. Glenn Bittner.
Glenn!
Hi, Glenn.
Glenn.
At the exact time we're talking about Ally Sheedy in a bathtub. Go figure.
and using mechanical assistance during sex. Yes.
Yes.
When she changed color.
Yes, when she changed color. We were just talking about it seemed to be kind of a running theme for some of these films. You had Howard the Duck with Leah Thompson, and now you hear you have a robot with Ally Sheedy, and that the bathtub scene, and then the dancing scene. Those are a bit awkward scenes, aren't they, Glenn? I mean, I'm sure they're trying to meant to be innocent, but...
No, they're not.
They're not, are they?
No, not at all.
Glenn, what do you think about those scenes? Do you think they are implying a bit that Johnny Five has some hardware for Ally Sheedy?
Mark. Mark the pervert man. No, not at all.
Pardon me.
Okay. not at all.
No. He's like five. As in Johnny Five is also like his emotional age.
Wow.
I don't know. Kind of gross.
I took him as a little older than five, maybe 15, I thought, than five. You know, I think I broke Cole.
I'm so sorry. I'll stop.
If he was 15, he wouldn't have said, oh, you changed color. He'd be like, hey, nice knockers. That's what he was 15.
Okay, you're very right. Yes, he would have. Well, he might have used a little more.
Excuse me, I need to go out of my room for a while. That might have been more like 15.
Okay, all right. So I'm reading too much into it, though. I just will say that those scenes were handled just a little bit differently, especially the dancing scene. But so yeah, we were just talking about too, Glenn, about the special effects in here and how Johnny Five looked really good, even for today's films, and how Number Five, excuse me, he's not Johnny until the end. Sorry, I know those. There's people out there that like to correct you on that. But, the practical effects, would you say they still hold up today for the most part, except for maybe a few of those shots?
I mean, hold up well enough. I mean, I think it's a more realistic robot than most of the ones that you see in most films still. As far as, like, what an actual functioning, early form, robot's going to be. And, it's not, obviously, the first one to come off the line is not going to be, a T.
1000?
T-1000 liquid metal. Nothing like that's going to come rolling off right away. So, no, I think it holds up just fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just impressive. I just loved the character and what the work that they put into it to sell him as a real character and not just a special effect. So I think they do it really well. And part of that too is the voice acting done by Tim Blaney, who does the voice for Number 5 in it. The way they have him talk too is, I think, helps just overall sell that character. Then there's the other side characters. I mean, because you have Number 5 and Stephanie, who it kind of revolves a little around four, but then we do have our scientist who created Number 5, played by Mr. Steve Guttenberg, playing Newton Crosby, a.k.a. Playing basically Mahoney, playing Steve Guttenberg. Because Steve Guttenberg pretty much plays Steve Guttenberg.
Newton Crosby, get the impression that he's supposed to be some reclusive, not really social, somebody with social anxiety. No, I can't deal with people. And Steve Guttenberg as well. Captain Charisma.
Well, it's the smirk. I mean, it's his constant smirk and everything. It's just like, this is like you're trying to take like Fabio and make him the unpopular kid at school. I didn't buy it. And it's Steve. I mean, he's all right. But again, he's really actually not on screen for that long either compared to, you know, what you would think for him being a name. That's what surprised me in this. Glenn, what did you think about Steve Guttenberg's Newton Crosby? Do you think that they could have possibly gotten someone a little bit, you know, better for that role?
Better than Steve Guttenberg? Boy, I don't know. I mean, his acting chops are Kevin Costner-esque.
Yeah.
I think they could have gotten someone better. I mean, Steve Guttenberg is always Steve Guttenberg.
Yeah.
It
was a pairing.
Whatever.
Again. It was a pairing of him.
The movie's not about him.
No, you're right. It was, again, though, a pairing with his Police Academy co-star, though, who played the, I guess, villain of the movie. The guy who is in pursuit of getting Number 5 back.
He's always a villain.
There's a number of people that play just, they got that role in the 80s and they could never go away from it.
He's not like an evil man, you know, he's always the guy of authority villain.
Yeah.
In almost everything. I mean, in this one where, you know, he's like head of security.
Yeah.
And, or then in obviously Police Academy where he's, you know, an instructor of the academy, or in Mannequin.
Yeah, that's the other one I was thinking of.
Is he a Mannequin?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's
you
a Mannequin.
One sick puppy.
Yes.
Holy shit, he is! I forgot about that.
He's the security guard.
He basically plays the same guy in every movie he's in.
Oh, man, I gotta watch that again. Wow.
So you do have that and him pairing up and I liked Austin Pendleton playing Howard. Austin, I thought, was again, he kind of plays himself a lot, but he was fun, and I forgot he was in this film actually until I watched it again. I'm like, oh wow, and so he's kind of playing him as well. But again, as Glenn said, it's not really about most of the human characters. It's just about John, you know, Number 5 and Stephanie and Number 5's discovery of who he is. Though there is one character in here that I don't think they would be able to get away with at all today. And Cole, would you agree? Ben? By Fisher Stevens.
Yeah, man. How do I comment on it? I think it's... Am I supposed to be offended when I watched the movie when I was 7 years old? You know, I mean, but it's 2016 and I'm 37 years old. I don't know how to feel about it. I kind of feel like I'm kind of a perverse even commenting on it, you know, because I tell you, this is one of my favorite movies of all time in terms of, like, just robot movie, you know, like a practical robot wandering around talking to people. This is pretty damn good. Oh, it's hard to beat, and especially with John Badham at the helm. But, boy, yeah, that character's pretty it's pretty fucking wretched. You know, every time he opens his mouth, you just want to bury your head in the sand. But
no, he has some funny lines.
He does. I don't mean that. I just mean the climate of how you watch movies has changed. That's all I'm saying. You know,
it has. But the thing is, his character. Now I was thinking about it though, Don. That was kind of a popular character for comedies in the 80s, wasn't it?
You know, and I'm not defending this by any means, but this type of humor is still popular. Look at Jeff Dunham. His whole shtick is mocking accents. I mean, it is still popular now.
Sure.
Is it offensive? Yes, absolutely can be. But it's not mean-spirited.
Right.
That's true.
And I love Fisher Stevens. I think he's a fantastic actor.
He's just amazing. Yeah.
Everything that he does is fantastic.
Yeah, his performance of Ben was just hilarious. I mean, he just really, you know, that character is just crazy. But just looking at it, I was watching it going, man, this.
And then by contrast, apparently he had the part, he lost the part to Bronson Pinchot, who was supposed to be a Wasp character.
Oof.
Ben was supposed to be a Wasp. And then, I don't know if it was creative differences or whatever, but they got rid of Bronson Pinchot and brought Fisher Stevens back in to play the Ben character. So which one would have been better? I don't think there was a really good choice there.
Gwen, what about you? How did you feel about the Ben character here in this? I mean, it was kind of typical 80s character for that, I guess, a race, if you want to put it. But what do you think? What do you think about that character? Do you think it today be found offensive, or do you think it's still it's done in good spirits and not being mean-spirited towards?
I don't think it's done in mean spirits, but I think it would definitely be considered offensive today to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just because, I mean, we should be beyond stuff like that, I guess, for lack of a better way of phrasing it. Where it's, you know, it's, I mean, how global we are now with the fact that, you know, I can talk to someone in China real time, or video chat with someone in, say, China or Belgium or anywhere real time, and like see them and talk to them, you know, where they're practically in my living room with me. I mean, we're so much more of a global, you know, race for whatever, you know, that I think it's lost some of its humor. And the fact that, you know, we should just be better than that, I guess.
Not to mention, people who are learning English as a second language actually tend to speak better than most native speakers of English.
Yeah.
that they do, and they know more about the country than those who were actually born here. So, it caught me out. You know, I forgot a bit about just, I remember some of the lines that Ben said, but then the portrayal of the character took me aback a little bit. Didn't take me. I mean, I love this movie quite a bit, and especially for the era it was made, that type of, you know, character showed up quite a bit, actually. I was thinking of it with the way, you know, where we've come 30 years. I was just like, wow, that's a character that just would not have flown today. Even though that humor is around, I think it would have been a lot more. It would have been changed before they actually released the film.
How old is the movie Don't Mess with the Zohan?
Oh.
Boy, what is that? Mid What, I forget what year that came out.
And the reason I bring that up is, it in poor taste, but it's still mocking language and accents.
That was 2008 was Don't Mess With
Yeah,
Those
so that's – and that was a big hit, and it was still messing, and it was still that same mode of humor.
Wow, that's a good point.
So it is still going on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But you know, I don't
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's there.
I'm also noticing it was the fact that it's the two cultures in there, Arabic, where I think a lot of people excuse it more just because of the fact that there is a lot of sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And also just a lot of just even those that don't necessarily hate Eric, there's a lot of still misunderstanding and not understanding their culture. And then the other side is Israeli, or, you know, basically Israeli / Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always been on the, it's okay to mock that. Like, you know, like, oh, you know, the poor Israeli and Jewish people that get mocked. It's the fact that, I mean, the number one people who mock them are other Jews. So it's just kind of, and just because there's been such a strong presence of Jewish people in Hollywood and in theater, it's just always kind of been a thing. And I think that's just kind of, that's just part of theater in Hollywood is, you know, those funny Israeli Jewish people. That's just kind of how they all are with their, you know, mashuganas and all that type of stuff. So it's, Well, I would say, it's still not an acceptable form, but it's not on the level of, you know, say, you know, doing a, you know, me love you a long time type of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that. I mean, you know, this is one of my all time favorite films is Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes. Yeah, man.
Which has, am I thinking of the wrong movie?
No, that's the right one. Breakfast with Tiffany's,
And the
at Tiffany's.
Horrible, horrible Mickey Rooney as a, I guess, Chinese man.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, he's in the building with Tiff. With,
yes.
Yeah, he's with
Audrey Hepburn.
Oh,
yeah. Gosh, it's awful.
Yeah, well.
And, I mean, something like that. I mean, the thing is that there are still people who would try stuff like that today. That's something a Seth MacFarlane would do.
Well, we've seen that as recently as Sausage Party.
Okay, I haven't seen Sausage Party.
Party is huge on the racial humor of stereotypes, and I think people gave it a bit of a pass because it was food instead of actual people. But if you looked at it, it was
still some complaints about Sausage Party in that regards, but not to the level of, you know, if someone had, you know, recreated Mickey Rooney's character for a movie, I mean, that would be, what the hell are you guys thinking? Because there's, I mean, nowadays, you know, you have the, that you just shouldn't have done that to, oh my God, what is actually wrong with you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that, you know, that stuck out with me, with his character, with Ben. So it shows you a change of times a little bit, you know, in the writing and such as well. Though you still have the big scare here with the whole reason, the motivation why the robots were built was so that it could take out the Ruskies.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, wow, I forgot that angle of the movie because I just remembered number 5, but I, you know, I'd forgot the motivation for him and his other robots to be built in the first place was to fight the Ruskies. And I'm like, it's been such a while that you forget just how much of that scare was out there sometimes, and it where it showed up even in the family comedy, like, you know, Short Circuit here. I was wondering too, though, did anyone get a maybe a bit of a Frankenstein vibe from this film with the whole how he becomes alive. Glenn, would you say there maybe is a hint or a feel a bit of Frankenstein as well? Because, you know, it is electricity that brings him alive. You know, he's you know, and it's inanimate object. Do you think there was maybe...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think anything where you have something inanimate that, you know, that is brought to life in some way, that's, you know, I mean, Frankenstein, of course you're going to have that similarity. You're going to have that, obviously, as some kind of a draw. Even if it's an unconscious thing, it's the fact that Frankenstein is so ingrained into most people's, you know, of course. It's even without knowing it's having an influence on you, it's having an influence on what you're making and what story you're writing.
Right. And here I felt that influence quite a bit in the beginning, you know, how it's running rampant, though he's not going around and killing people. He's turning other robots into the Three Stooges, which was a common theme in the 80s as well. Would you say, Cole, the evil idiot box known as TV? How about that scene where how he learns about our culture through TV and she?
That is a scene that is in so many 80s movies. Like, literally, I can't even begin to count them. But the base notion of this movie, to me, really is, like, the opening shot where you see the red roses kind of drifting in the wind, and then you see the military sort of complex just plow over them. A very long and extended shot, and that extends to Ally Sheedy's character, who is nurturing a three-legged dog. You know, all of these wounded animals, she's trying to keep them afloat. They're about to reclaim her house, I believe. I haven't watched this in years aside from tonight, but I believe there's talk of somebody snooping around her house because of... you know, all of her animals there. So I do think the whole movie sort of sets up this notion of, it's a versus tale. It's a versus of, I don't know how to describe it without sounding political, but it is a very heart tugging tale that all fairy tales sort of dwell upon. I hope we do that Watership Down, episode in the future, but that ties into this as well, which is sort of the notion of, there's something coming to plow over everything that's natural, and who's going to save it? You know, what is life? Life is not a malfunction, as number five says. And I think that's why the movie has poignance. I'm sorry. Did I lose the question?
You might have lost the question there a bit. I was mostly asking about that, the idea of this – hits all those common 80s tropes, including the idiot box, which Johnny Five uses to learn more after he goes through every book in her house. So
first,
but I just found it funny because that was prevalent so much in the 80s of TV is going to fry your brain.
It's so true, but it does tie into the viewpoint of the film also, kind of. More or less, which is, you know, everybody's trying to think outside the box. And
well, it's a technology thing. It's the technology theme as well. How about you, Don? How'd you feel with that? You feel like we've seen that many, many times before with the whole TV's going to rot your brain?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, absolutely. And I think even more so. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, one of my history professors making a comment that if you really want to learn about society and what society was all about, you dig through their garbage. You dig through the dumps at the time of the year. And as we have evolved more into television and the internet, that is the ultimate garbage dump.
Wow.
Whew, wow. That's
awesome.
That is awesome. Damn TV. Of course, nowadays, if they made it, it would be the internet will rot your brain.
As we evolve, so does our garbage.
So does our garbage. Glenn, did the TV rot your brain as a young man?
No, not at all. It was my best friend growing up.
Did that kind of
bring out the Hellmans and bring up? Wait, sorry.
We know a lot of jingles. That was kind of fun seeing the old commercials on the TV. It did bring back some memories. But what was it? What is it about TV? I mean, because here we had Johnny Five go through his books and then the TV, and then, you know, he learned a lot more from the TV. Did the TV actually hurt him, or did it help Johnny Five, Glenn?
Maybe a little of both.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what I think it does to everyone.
Sure.
There's good and bad on it, so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because, well, he did use it to help turn the robots into the Three Stooges.
Yes.
But then he, which I suddenly realized now, Michael Bay, you're going to get sued by Johnny Five because you took the idea of Bumblebee and you totally ripped off Short Circuit with Bumblebee talking like the TV commercials, because Johnny Five does that quite a bit throughout this film, is using TV and things he watched to talk and communicate with people. So expect to be sued eventually there, Mr. Michael Bay, with your Transformers. Sorry. Well, I did. I had a flashback to Bumblebee when he's watching it. You know, Johnny Five was sitting there and he was cooking the, yes, number five, I know. But he was cooking breakfast for Allie, which, again, goes back to the whole weird kind of awkward relationship thing,
where
he's making breakfast for her and he's quoting TV. And I'm like, wow, this sounds a lot like the dialogue from Bumblebee and Transformers. So I think I know where Michael Bay got that idea from now. So I think we're going to wrap it up for the evening here. We've taking this little comedy, and I think we've really kind of dug into it a little bit. Hopefully, if those of you who were not growing up in the 80s are looking for a fun, interesting film that does have a lot of laughs in it, I think it's Short Circuit. I think we'll go down here. We'll get everyone's final thought on this film. You know, if they would recommend it to possibly the younger group out there, if you think they might enjoy it. So, Glenn, how about you first? Would you recommend it? Would you say that it would still maybe appeal to the younger crowd today?
I think so. Maybe. I would recommend it, but I mean, I could see some younger people, the younger crowd being like, man, this is lame or whack or whatever it is the young people say these days.
I'm not sure, because their slang changes daily, I think, now, which is another change from back then.
tell me about it.
So,
Don't worry, though, Mark. It'll be my bae.
Oh, man. I'm so glad I'm your bae, and you can be my boo.
Yes.
Dear.
It'll be the bae and boo show. There you go. Totes my goat. Anyway, Don, how about you? Would you recommend it to for a watch for the younger ones, or do you think that they would just look at this and go, man, this is lame?
It would really depend on the person. I mean, I can think of specific people who I could definitely recommend this to, and they would probably love it. Mm-hmm. I mean, ages ranging all the way down to 18 and younger, I can think of people who would absolutely love this movie. And then I can think of people in that same age group who would just give me this look like I sprouted a second head and they called myself Zephod. It depends.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I think it's a fun movie.
It is a fun movie. It's a lot of fun, I think, especially... you know, there's some scenes in here that are just done so well. You're like, wow, this film was made in 86, really? Cole, how about you? Would you recommend it to anybody, or would you say maybe some select tastes out there?
Man, I'd recommend it on so many levels. And, you know, there's so many levels to squeeze this thing, you know, into somebody's radar. Like, hey, look. Sci-fi films, 1986. watch every sci-fi film released in 1986. You'll have a great time. Short Circuit, Maximum Overdrive, The Fly, Aliens, Big Trouble in Little China. You know, I would recommend them. I would also recommend it on the level of Christ. Watch everything in John Badham's filmography. Mm-hmm. I mean, start with Saturday Night Live, Saturday Night Fever, which isn't my favorite movie of his. But obviously, follow his career, and you'll see a pattern of optimistic filmmaking. Movies that have an improvisational, uplifting notation to every scene. And that's worth it. Also, it's worth it just to see the amazing animatronics, and just an interesting snapshot of the time, which is this is very 80s, and it's the best of the 80s to me. Ali Sheedy, John Badham, Steve Guttenberg, for Pete's sake. I mean, come on. Just make some popcorn, you know, maybe open a cheap beer and have fun.
Yeah, I agree as well that it, though I do know some people, like Don mentioned, there are some people out there that I know who are just like going, oh man, this is, but my honorable son number one, who is 16, he dug it. He thought a few things could change, but he dug it. He didn't think it was awful by any means. So I guess, you know, for a 16-year-old to say, yeah, it was all right, Dad, I think that's the most you can really ask for from a teenager. So, you know, so it does have some appeal, I think, depending on the person, the younger person.
So I just have one question I'd like to ask all you guys.
Sure.
Do you think with movies like this and other peer movies of this time that we've talked about over the years, are these movies cheesy now or cliche now because they were always cliche, or did they set the standard for cliche?
Ooh, and cheesy? Good question. Glenn, why don't you answer first or go first? Do you feel that this maybe set the standard and that's why it seems more cheesy now, or were they always cheesy?
There's always been a degree of cheese, but I think this set the standard in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's, I mean, we by nature are a cheesy species.
It's not easy being cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, for every great thing we've done, there's 20 kind of okay moments, you know.
So, yeah, dude. Yeah.
So I mean, you know, a little of both, I guess.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Cole? You think this maybe helped set that cheesy trope? Or were they,
you know, I don't, man. I actually, honestly, not to, you know, kind of offset anything anybody said, but I sort of view this as sort of high art. I really do. I think Short Circuit's great. I remember renting it when I was a kid, right? It came out on Friday. I believe all new releases came out on Friday at that point. And mm-hmm. we rented it. This is absolutely true. I'm not exaggerating it. And brought it back. It was due back that Sunday. We rented it again because it was a holiday and I was off school till Tuesday. My stepfather was sent to the video store to return it that Monday. He showed up not knowing what movie he was returning, rented the first movie the clerk recommended, and brought back Short Circuit again. So I basically watched that movie for 5 days as a kid, you know, and it was fantastic. How it translates to now, I would say it's much better than a lot of the stuff that's out there. I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound bitter, but you know, I'm thinking of a lot of different things, you know, that involve robots of that size that have been done via CGI. And like Cronenberg's The Fly, I'm trying to remember a CGI incarnation that rivals it. Mm. And there's really nothing. And maybe that's just due to the editing. I think it is. But I think it's pretty damn solid. I would be surprised. I mean, really, man, if you have a history in editing and or special effects and you watch Short Circuit, there's very little to fault. It's pretty damn solid. That's my opinion. I don't know.
It is. It doesn't mean it still can't be cheesy, though, and solid.
No, absolutely. So. Absolutely. I'm so sorry. Absolutely. The word cheesy, you know, it freaks me out. I would hate to think, because like Ghosts of Mars, you know, I'm sure John Carpenter wasn't trying to be cheesy. And everybody says, well, you made a cheesy film. And he's like, oh, shit, I'm just too old. And I run into that with my work, too. It's like, God, is that intentionally cheesy? It's like, oh, shit. Nothing. I was just trying to be current, you know? Fuck.
No, there's nothing wrong with cheesy. I think the problem is it's used a lot, and it's been used a lot negatively. I don't view as a film or a scene or whatnot negatively by calling it cheesy all the time. I think cheesy is fun. I think as long as you don't go continuously throughout the same movie, I think amount of cheese is fine. And yeah, I do think that a movie's, especially the 80s in that, kind of set a trope to where you look at it now and they seem more cheesy than maybe when we first watched them. That's because it's been mimicked a lot because...
Gotcha.
Cheese sells. Not just in Wisconsin, though it's really good.
I manage a cheese department. Imagine that. I am so cliche. I'm a living cliche.
To some respect, cliches or cheesiness, and you guys can definitely disagree with me. I think they'll help putting a little bit into it, help the audience possibly understand a film that, you know, they might not get. They get a cheesy scene, you know, they kind of follow, you know, yeah. But not necessarily in a bad way. It's just that they understand, you know, the actor, oh, he's playing that up a little bit. Doesn't mean they're not enjoying it. In fact, they're probably enjoying it a little more because it you know, it maybe get a little relief because they can understand what's going on here at least.
Yeah.
But, you know, as far as the standards go, I think the 80s especially, many of these films influenced today's filmmakers so much that when you do use those cheesy scenes and then you go back and watch these, it seems to be amplified only because it's been done so much since. So what about you, Don? To answer your own question, do you think that they're more amplified now because the cheese has been used so much?
I like to think so.
Mm-hmm.
I really like campy, cheesy films. It's one very specific niche of genre films that I really enjoy. And I go back and I watch some of these older films from the 80s and I think how much I loved them back then. And I never occurred to me that they were cheesy or campy at that time. They were just fun.
Mm-hmm.
And now in retrospect, I just wonder, I mean, obviously, you know, that movies like the Police Academy series is super cheesy, and you know there are certain people, certain actors associated with certain movies, and look at Mannequin and it's super cheesy.
Mm-hmm.
And I catch myself thinking, okay, is this movie cheesy because it's cheesy, or did it set a new standard of trope?
Yeah, and what do you think? You think it set a trope? I would agree that it set a trope. I mean, down to the wonderful soundtrack of Short Circuit, to where if you grew up in 86, you heard Here's Johnny during 86, or Who's Johnny? Excuse me, in 86 and 87 and 88, so, and then when the sequel came out, you got to hear it again.
Uh-huh.
Don't get me wrong, it's a good song, but you listen to that and you're like, yeah, that put together with the film is definitely one of those tropes that used quite a bit. And yeah, people now would call real cheesy, but back then it was just kind of the standard fun level. So what does that say about us now? I don't know, but 30 years ago, this film came out, and to me today, it's still very entertaining, and it stands up well. Outside of a couple effect shots, I think it stands up really well. So we'll close it up here tonight. I want to thank our crew here for talking. Don, did you want to add anything?
Oh, no, I'm good.
Okay. So we'll just go real quick, and we'll see where you can find all these fine folks when they're not talking here with me. So, Cole?
Rock on, man. I am Cole Meredith. I make little independent creepy psychological horror films. Seek me out at Shadows and Lovers Productions on Facebook, or just Cole James Meredith on Facebook, or if you're interested in goofy little memes and digital art, find me on Horror Roar. But the name of the new movie is The Last Great Horror Movie, and we're super proud of it, and it's going to have a digital release very soon. And thanks for having me, Mark and Don and Glenn. It's just a real honor to be here with these guys. Really, if you don't follow Mark's work, please do. No, I'm serious. He's borderline genius. And
oh god, oh boy,
it's true. It's damn true. Please follow Mark's work. His reviews are amazing. Sorry. I am so sorry.
No, you're making me blush now, Cole.
I am so sorry, man.
Not in front of my boo. You can't say things like that in front of my boo.
Understood. I won't do it again. I'm sorry.
I still want to be his bait. So, Don, where can they find you at?
You can find me in the audience at intheaudience.net.
Fantastic. And Glenn?
You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website at guyinabunker.com, or just follow me on Twitter at guyinabunker, or on YouTube, guyinabunker productions, the B-Movie Bunker.
Fantastic. And you can find links to them as well as all my stuff. You can start at specialmarkproductions.com and go from there to find my YouTube channel, Twitters, is that MovieManiac3D or Spoiler Room PDCS. Follow us there. Would love to subscribe. If you listen to us on iTunes, please subscribe to us there, as well as leave some feedback and comments. Love to hear your thoughts on any of the stuff that we do here, where we just talk movies. And I hope you've enjoyed our discussion here of Short Circuit, and hopefully maybe make you seek it out. Just to give you a heads up, we are running into our favorite month of October, and there is a horror fest coming up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Independent horror has returned, and if you caught it a couple of years ago, we did some coverage of the films of the Oshkosh Horror Film Festival. Well, it's now the Northeastern Wisconsin Horror Film Festival, or New Horror Film Festival, and we will be doing coverage of that as well. So look for that. I'll be doing interviews, the podcast here, the Spoiler Room. We'll be doing doing some recording of the films that were shown at the festival. Lots of great stuff that you can follow if you subscribe to us, or come back and visit us again here in the Spoiler Room, where the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies. Say goodnight, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.